And if Teddy would certify our compliance here.
We are. The meeting was posted on March 30th and April 4th.
Okay, thank you. And in case you haven't figured it out, Supervisor Decker is somewhere south, which I've heard was the Bahamas. You know, we can all feel sad. So now you get me with my sore throat, so hopefully I can continue talking here. Okay, so the youth and governance recommendations. Since Supervisor Skalitsky's not here, what is your pleasure on that?
Well, everyone received the summary prepared by Chairman Decker, and she put together the committee recommendations, or assigned youth to a committee based upon a couple of things. One, the overall scoring that was done by the interview committee, which included two youth and governance members, Michael Hurdle, which is why Michael's here tonight, because he's probably very interested to know what happened as a result of those interviews, and Sydney Robson, because both Mikkel and Felix on our committee submitted an application to reapply a second year. However, I will state that only Felix came to the interview. Mikkel did not. She decided that life is just too busy and that she didn't feel like she could really commit the time for another year. So she withdrew herself. So based upon a series of data, one being the score sheets, two being an opportunity to have a wide representation of all of our high schools interviewed, represented, so that we have a representation of high schools present, she made the following recommendation, and that's what I sent to you. And I didn't make copies. I should have thought of that, but I didn't. So I can announce those, and I can also state that she put forward a suggestion as a recommendation for a mentor. And if the PDEC committee would like to, what you would do as a committee is make the recommendation to the county board chairwoman that you're recommending these youth and governance members be selected for each committee and these mentors. And then she and I will send the letter to the mentors asking if they're willing to serve as a mentor. And if they are and they haven't gone through a criminal background check to be a mentor to work with youth, then we ask them to do that. So it's kind of a two-pronged approach. Would you be willing to do it? And then are you willing to go through a criminal background check? Once all supervisors have been approved from the criminal background check, then I let the county board chairwoman know that, and she then officially appoints them, and they're appointed at the May 16th meeting along with the youth and governance members, okay? So the youth and governance recommendations for finance and admin are Jeremy Yin, Emma Hiller-Kavner, with mentor Supervisor Greg Retzloff. Human Services, Megan Setter and Nakia Hughes, and the supervisor for that committee as mentor is Andy Berg. Joint Services was Jamal Hansen and Janaki. Did I say that right? Janaki, correct? Janaki Rawal. With mentor recommendation of Jenny Tunkies. Judiciary and Law, Morgan Colomaga, she's a current youth and governance member, and Anna Desilie, and Supervisor Skillets, he is the recommended mentor. For the Legislative Committee, Isabella Ricker and Aubriana Madke, with Supervisor Poole as the recommended mentor. For PDEC, Jonathan Filiatrot. Boy, I'm going to have to learn how to say that. Say that again.
Filiatrot.
With Julia Arturi and Supervisor Gilmore, the recommended mentor. Public Works, Alexander Dawson and Aiden Moore, with the mentor recommendation of Supervisor Jeff Wambold.
So we only have one carryover then?
We do. The alternates recommended would be Abigail Snyder and Felix Desimoni. as recommended alternates. So if any of these youth, for whatever reason, would choose not to accept the nomination, and some of them do, they realize their life is busy and they reconsider, then the first alternate is asked to step into that role. And or any time between now and when attendance is taken in December and they haven't met their 50% requirement, that alternate is asked to serve and has in the past. So.
Any discussion?
I would make a motion to approve the recommendations for youth and governments and the recommended mentors.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Sorry, I should ask for the vote first.
Aye.
But we didn't have our regular yig. So.
We didn't.
Well, that's true. I only voted the yig.
I should be voting.
Well, I don't think that's a problem.
Well, I want to thank the supervisors, Supervisor Poole and Michael, for serving on the committee, as well as Supervisors Gilmore and Supervisor Skalitsky, or Decker and Gilmore. I wrote Gilmore right here.
Decker.
I wasn't back
here. For serving on the committee, because it was a 3-night process. We ended up doing an extra night because a couple of the candidates couldn't make the 2 evenings, and it becomes a long night. It's I would ask that you think of a couple of things. Number one, I wanted to share with you the updated statistics that just got completed, and this is what I will share with the high school principals of these schools so that they are aware of the information from their high schools. I know Supervisor Skalitsky emailed me after the interviews because he was quite surprised that we had no one from Bradford, and I said, you know, it is true, there were no even applications submitted from Bradford, yet there were 8 nominations. So he had a conversation with the principal there, and the principal was quite surprised that there were so few nominations and said, we need to do a better job. And so Supervisor Skalitsky suggested, is it possible to have current youth and governance members go to the high school and speak to the teachers and encourage them to have more nominations submitted? And I said, absolutely. And so I think that is a way to use the youth and governance members, and I would encourage this committee to maybe pursue that and think about how to make those opportunities more relevant and give the youth a real role to do that. So I will share this with the principals because we do invite them to the appointment ceremony on May 16th. The other piece that I think, there's 2 other elements that I think as a committee you need to wrestle with, and you don't have to decide them tonight. You may want to wait till you have the whole committee, but I encourage you to think about 2 things. One is, given that there are only 14 available positions because of the 7 committees, there's only 14 available. Is there any thought, or should there be any thought, into having individual youth serving more than 1 year? Now, I say that, and I think Michael, it'd be great to hear your perspective. There obviously are a lot of pros and cons to each of those, and I think you need to maybe have some discussion about that. It does limit the number of people who can serve. If you've already served, then that's 1 less seat available for another youth, right? I mean, that's another way to think of it. On the other hand, it's your 2nd year, you probably get a whole lot more out of it because you're not, I mean, I heard both you and Sydney say how much confidence you've gained, and you feel like it's an opportunity for you to have a stronger connection to this adult youth partnership that we so value with young people. So, you know, what are your thoughts?
I would be wondering how many applicants we received, or number of applications we received. I know that this time it was low. I know previous years it's been quite high. If for some reason we see a large spike in these applications, we might want to consider limiting youth to 1 year. But right now, I think that the value that the community receives from having a teenager being able to represent his peers for an additional year and having all that experience, confidence, and knowledge behind him, it would be a great opportunity for the count, not only for YIG, but also the county and teenagers themselves to benefit from. And if we were to receive a larger amount, and we would want to get more perspectives in and more high schools represented, I think that's when we should maybe think of limiting it to 1 year terms. But until then, I would say that we should keep it the way it is right now. Because diversity is, you know, is a very important thing, but if we don't have many applications to choose from, the experience and knowledge behind it would be a much more valuable asset than the diversity.
I will pass this on to Chairman Decker and the colleagues who will be carrying forth the work with youth and governance to be able to put this on a future agenda for discussion, because I do think you may need to maybe think about, you know, how you want to approach it. The second one is, and I regret that I don't have better statistics for tonight, and I apologize. I just did not get it accomplished before tonight. But it, I think what made me think of it was more last evening. I was at the YAR board meeting at the county administration building, and Human Services was meeting at the same time. And after the Human Services meeting, they Janine Dreyer shared with me that the two youth and governance members did not show for that meeting. And that she was quite concerned that their attendance had been very poor, that they had not been attending. So it made me think, that light bulb in my head went, oh, I wonder if this has happening on other committees, because I have seen this committee as well. We've seen, you know, after December, after the attendance is taken, then the committee the attendance does tend, and I wondered how that was across the board. And I don't have the data to show you. I think you should look at that, and is there, I mean, here's my concern, is that we're going to recognize youth and governance members for their participation in May, but is it an equal representation when someone hasn't been attending committee meetings and they're still getting recognized as a youth and governance member when they really haven't been contributing? And so as an oversight committee, do you want to say, we're going to take attendance twice? We're going to take it in December or November as we do, and we'll replace you, but we're gonna take it again in April to determine whether or not you are recognized at the county board meeting in May, if you fulfilled your obligations.
And I was at the Human Services meeting yesterday, and the time had been changed on it. It's usually, you know, the second, or the first Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
And this was the second Tuesday of the month because of the elections.
That could do something, right? Because you put in your head, I'm always, my committee's always going to meet on
but
the
I did
third
wonder where
Tuesday.
Both the
yeah,
were
yeah. I mean, and that could be part of it, Supervisor. I mean, that you just, yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
But we also had the legislative meeting, which they changed the time on that, the date on that twice, and then both of you showed up. So, you know, okay. I guess it's everybody's scheduling. You know,
yeah.
You just don't know.
I think that for returning YIG members that want to reapply, we might want to take their attendance throughout the entire year, not just the first part, but their entire year into consideration when selecting them to serve on another term. Because if we know that they have consistently been showing up to all their meetings, we know that they would be an asset. But if they have sporadic attendance, you know, they, you know, 60% through December, 75% through December, but all of a sudden they drop off afterwards, that would have to leave questions. Oh,
something for the interview
back
team to even yep consider. I did bring that, if you remember, so that you could see that. That's helpful to know. Yeah, consider attendance for the returning members.
So should we consider that even in the point system, or in the, you know, for giving them that?
I think you do need to remind the committee chair people that the YIGs need to vote first, because I've been in many meetings where, the, you know, they didn't ask, so they kind of voted with everybody else.
They kind of forget. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point too.
And
yeah,
the legislative committee, you could barely hear the vote, when, even though they ask them first, you know. I had to ask, okay, what was the vote there?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, so I will get the data, and I think we can wrestle with what you think you might want to do. I mean, we are now just a month out, where they'll be recognized on the, at the May 16th meeting. So it might, it may be a little late for this year, but something to think about for policies for next year. I seriously do think that it should be something to think about.
When they do the announcements or the recognition at the meeting, could they say they made 50% of their required meetings, or they, do you know what I mean? So you're acknowledging what their accomplishment was. So, you know, somebody who only made the 50% and never came back after December, shouldn't get the same recognition for somebody who's been to 90% of their meetings.
It's interesting, yeah. I don't know, we haven't done that. And, you know, what we've done is they just simply say their names, they walk up, get recognized, and sit down. So there hasn't been any, in fact, the only thing that's even read is their name and their committee.
Well, I think that they should do that. I mean, I think that they should do something along those lines so that the accomplishment that's there is recognized. I mean, you know, as far as when these people go or these youth go back and they put this on their resume too, you know, their certificate says that they've made 50% of the meetings, or do you know what I mean? So you can't just go back and use that they were a member, but on their resume, but only came to 50% of. I think that we should make it fair for everyone.
I can pass that suggestion on to the chairwoman. You can see what for that county board meeting.
I think I'd also agree with what Mike said about, you know, if you make the 50%, then you would be eligible to reapply for the next year. But if you don't make the required amount of meetings, then you're not eligible to reapply. Then those spots would be available to incoming nominations.
What was the thought process behind two for each committee when this was originally created? Why not one? Just out of curiosity.
Actually, that's a great question. And my memory will be that at first it was only considered one. And through a lot of deliberation, they realized that, that really puts the youth at a disadvantage because it's a very intimidating environment, and that there is comfort in numbers, that you'd feel a bit more, shall we say, at ease if you had a fellow youth with you. So they decided to do two. But I don't recall anybody ever saying, gee, maybe we should do three or four. That's actually a really great question. I don't know that conversation was ever held during that part of the process.
Because when you first mentioned, you know, 14 should be, say, only 1 year, the first thing I thought of was, should we do three? But then I thought, you know, the tradition is two. There probably is a reason for that. But when Supervisor Bostrom brought that up, I think he has a very good point. Maybe we should look into, should we do a third?
Mm-hmm. That way, if one of those is missing, we still have two to, you know, bond with.
And again, diverse perspectives. You could have a different, you know, two people could have similar perspectives, but a third could have a different. Or
sure.
Again, you said earlier, Supervisor Poole, that if one's missing, it's not one by themselves. They still have a potential other person with them.
Right.
Great ideas. You know.
I noticed the Yeggs had a real difficult time voting at legislative because they were very controversial issues. So they,
which they may have felt just a little uncertain.
Even though there's two of them, you know.
Good point.
Can I ask a question? What's the requirement for them to attend the county board meetings? Are they only supposed to be attending these meetings?
Yeah, one county board meeting throughout their term of being a YIG member.
Okay.
Yeah, just one.
Oh, wow. I wonder if you could do like a second experience. Like, for instance, you have the individuals that come to their sessions or their committee meetings, but maybe you could offer an experience of, you know, to another 14 people to come to a county board meeting.
Oh, well, anyone could.
Anyone could come to any of the meetings, obviously, but, you know, just to get them to offer it to more people. I mean, we had 260 applicants and only 14 people are going to have the opportunity to participate.
I know.
So, I mean, that's really small. I mean, I agree. I think we should add a third person and maybe even expand to.
What I might suggest, Mr. Chairman, is that all these ideas be placed on a future PDEC meeting agenda and you concentrate on just thinking about the future of youth and governance. Because the other piece that I also wanted to just bring forward, and Supervisor Splitsky and Decker aren't here, and I think they should be, is to also talk about the interview process itself. You know, how did the questions work? are there any questions we'd want to change? Did we like the way that it was done? Because I think I mentioned last year, and something for us to consider, I would have liked to have had the opportunity to go to the Racine County's version, because they do it a bit different. They bring in 3 youth all at one time. And I think this year they brought in 4. And so they interview 4 youth at a time and ask them all different questions, but the youth are, I don't understand the dynamics on how it would work. You know, for me, I figure we are barely keeping up with what we're doing, and thinking about 4 of them could be an interesting, but they say it works and they like it. So I think the whole process probably has, I'd encourage you to spend some time talking about that, and then I'll take these notes on these suggestions and ideas, and then perhaps think about before, I mean, this year's pretty set because we've already shared all the information with youth and they made their decision to apply based upon current process, right? So we can't change midstream. But certainly for the 18-19 year, I definitely would say maybe there's a way for you to think about changing it and making some significant changes by adding 3, considering if they should serve a second year, looking at attendance, all of those things. So I can do a good job of.
A quick comment just for my own clarification. I'm glad you mentioned that Racine County has a similar program, because I was looking at this list and noticed 2 Racine schools on the list. Even though these nominations and subsequent applicants are from Racine schools, are they Kenosha County residents?
Correct. That's okay. A requirement.
Good.
Yeah, that's the requirement.
That was the first thing that caught my eye. I was like, that's odd. But,
yeah, but they are.
They're county residents.
That is number one requirement is you must reside.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah.
Which is why I was kind of thinking it's a little odd, but okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. So I can do that. All right. So good. Good. Thank you. It was, I think, another great program, and we'll get to recognize some of our 14 youth who are available to attend on the May 16th, and then hopefully. Once these letters go out, and we'll get approval from Chairwoman Brunig to do that, those letters will go out by the end of the week. So youth will be. So not till the end next week can you say anything.
No.
Although it's a public, but it won't be posted yet. I don't think
if they ask me, I'll say that all meetings are public.
That's exactly right. Although I did ask Felix and Mikkel not to participate, and so I guess maybe that's something I did invite them and encourage them to come to the second part of the meeting. Supervisor Poole, as acting chairperson, if you want to speak to Felix and let him know in person that he is selected as an alternate, I mean, maybe as due respect to him being a current member, he might want to hear that, and rather than get his letter in the mail, right? He could say, well, why did they just tell me that when they saw me? Right? So if you could, I think that's appropriate.
Okay. And just so you know, I will not be at the meeting or at the YIG thing next month.
Oh, you're going to miss it. Okay. Are you going to
Malta.
The Bahamas? Oh, where are you going?
Malta.
Awesome. These travelers you all are.
I also will not be at that meeting. I'm not going that far, though. Going to Key West.
Hopefully Aaron is going to be back.
Right?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I already told Aaron I'm not going to be there, so hopefully she's planning to be there.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for letting me know, though. That's good. So you won't be able to meet your YIG members for your who you're the mentor for. Okay, we'll let them.
That'll be back till the 17th. So
okay,
that's one day later.
So we'll let them know they connect with you after that.
Okay.
Okay. Good. Thank you all very much.
Okay, so you ready with the Farm Fresh Atlas?
That would be nice.
Yes. Got a little. Activity for you, but you can do it while I'm speaking, and we'll kind of recap afterwards. But and an atlas if you don't already have one.
That's better than a refashion of a PTO. Was it a PTO shaft?
Oh, PTO shaft. Yes.
That was fun. That and the garden.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes.
Okay.
I actually.
This one's not quite as fun, but it's informative. It'll be informative for me. I'm actually just using you guys. So.
I thought we were going to get to see the new one here. I got excited. I thought she might.
Oh, no, not yet. But you guys will get kind of a sneak peek at it. So. Okay, so you can fill out these questions as I'm speaking. I'll kind of collect the information after I'm all done. If we have time, we can talk about it. How much time do I have?
And they need to be next door by 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So maybe
and
a couple of updates. So
okay.
Maybe by 10 till.
Okay. It might not even be that long. So let's see here. Okay, so you've heard me talk about the Farm Fresh Atlas quite a bit, but I wanted to give you a little bit of more background on the project and then kind of tell you where it's going. The overall goal of my position in the past couple of years has been trying to build capacity within the organization, since it has been kind of under our wing since 2004. So that's a long time, and we've provided a lot of leadership and guidance throughout the years, and different people have kind of come and went, and it's been more independent, less independent over the years, but we're trying to make it self-sufficient and find ways for it to keep on into the future and keep providing such a great resource for consumers and producers, not only here in Kenosha County, but throughout the whole southeastern Wisconsin area. So, as I mentioned, we've had the Southeastern Wisconsin Atlas since 2004, but we are part of a broader network that includes atlases all across the state. So there are five of those. We're kind of focused in the 10-county area down in the southeast. We've printed over those years anywhere from 50,000 to 90,000 copies a year, and those are distributed throughout the whole area, mostly by volunteers. So we have a big volunteer network that we rely on to get them out to people. And I counted it up, and cumulatively we've gotten out nearly a million hard copies over the whole time we've been existing throughout this area. But the overall goals of the kind of the whole statewide network and us here in southeastern Wisconsin are to increase awareness and attendance at farmers markets. That's one of our kind of primary goals, and thereby increasing sales for farmers, either at those markets or by having people to make direct purchases, either kind of on a small scale or wholesale. And then increasing consumption of locally produced healthy fresh food. That's probably the third, and you know, probably just as important as some of the economic goals, but trying to get healthy food into the hands of consumers, especially those that are low income or kind of resource limited. So there's kind of the two faceted sides of the Atlas. One is to increase sales and presence at markets, but it's also a really good tool for creating awareness of agriculture in general, especially in this area, which is a more urban part of the state where everybody's not connected to farming. So we try to use the Atlas in that way as a tool for our audience to learn more about farming, to learn more about products that are seasonally available near them, and informing them of when asparagus is in season, when they can go to a farmer's market and expect to buy that. That's always a common thing that farmers market vendors hear is you have people asking for all sorts of products any time of the year, and consumers aren't really knowledgeable of what actually grows here in Wisconsin at what time. So so every year we try to include a little seasonal availability chart, as well as a resource for those that are income limited in some way, either seniors or low income women their families. So we have, last year we created a resource that we didn't include in the Atlas that just gave a little direction for folks that do have those SNAP benefits. You can use those on healthy foods, and by all means, there's a big push to start using those benefits on healthier foods, or thinking about, limiting those resources and how people can use them. So getting more low-income folks into the farmers markets is one way of doing that, and then when they're there, informing them of how they even go about it can be kind of an intimidating process if you don't really know how to use your benefits at the farmers markets. And many farmers markets do accept those benefits. Many individual market vendors do accept those benefits, but that's not always known to the consumer. We partnership with nutrition educators in the UW Extension offices throughout the area. They always take atlases and utilize them at their meetings with clients. A big use that we found is hospitals and clinics using the Atlas as a resource for some of their like diabetes focus groups or people that are recovering from heart surgery and looking to find some healthy options. There is a growing movement in the hospital realm of doing prescriptions for healthy foods. So there is some work going on up at St. Mary's Hospital in Milwaukee with that right now. And they've used the Atlas because it's one way they can write that healthy food prescription and then give somebody a resource of where to find those products. So we are working also on a collaboration with Bondi Food Center, which is out of Milwaukee, to increase traffic at farmers markets and also increase low-income folks' access to farmers markets and access to the benefits that they can use with vendors at the farmers markets. So it also, being involved with the Atlas helps me a lot in my work, just making connections with producers locally, knowing who's out there. I can use it as a resource for when I'm working with somebody that's looking into going into agriculture and wondering where they could really find a niche in the area. You know, I kind of say, look who your neighbors are, look who's producing what, and see if you might be able to find something that's different and unique that you could really find a market for. It's also a really good resource for restaurateurs. These are some of our chefs that we collaborate with on fundraisers. Peter Sandroni up in Milwaukee and Jack Kastner, who's a culinary arts instructor at MATC up in Milwaukee. So they're always using it as a resource to find product and find new producers that they haven't yet connected with. So also, if you recognize, some of you might know Bill Stone. He's an apple producer here in Kenosha County, but he's recently been featured. It's on our board. He's also been featured on the show Wisconsin Foodie, which is on public television. So actually, I just was on the phone with Kyle Cherik of Wisconsin Foodie yesterday. He was asking me if I could give him the new Atlas because he's trying to find farms in particular that would be interested in serving as an event venue. So, you know, there's all different ways in which people use it. You always hear of something new and different. But so Kyle is speaking at our upcoming fundraiser, and we're looking to make connections with him in the future, perhaps even featuring the Atlas on the show. So
I just need to stop. If you all have not yet seen Wisconsin Foodie, it's on Milwaukee Public Television. It's an outstanding program on local foods, and Kyle is their host. Big shout out. It's a great program. I never miss it.
Yeah.
What night is it on?
Thursdays.
What night?
7. Okay. I think it comes on right after John McGivern's.
Yep. My dad watches it all
the time. Around the corner. Yeah. John McGivern around the corner, and then Kyle, and then Wisconsin Booty comes on later.
He watches that religiously.
Yeah, we tape it. So, yeah, it's a great program.
Great show. Yeah, and you can watch past episodes online, I think.
You can.
They're all available online.
You can.
So, if you want to see the one with Bill Stone, it's really good. Bill's like a natural at being on TV, so it's great. And it talks about Kenosha County, which is awesome. So we've done some kind of feedback tallying efforts in the past. This is just what some folks have had to say. So we're really popular around this time of year, especially. We're always getting calls wondering, you know, people wondering where the most recent Atlas is. It's just the demand for it exceeds what we're able to supply in terms of printed copies. So then we usually direct people to the online version. So producers also see it as a huge value. Most of the people that are in the Atlas have been with the Atlas since the beginning, and every time we get a new producer that chooses to list, they typically stay with us. So it's I think they see a lot of value in it. It's pretty affordable means of marketing, and they get a lot of value for their contribution. So looking into this year and kind of what's coming, I didn't give you the actual 2017 Atlas. It hasn't been printed quite yet, but we've revamped the design and tried to make it more user-friendly with a chart that indicates which products are available at which farms and which counties they're in. So organizing and really focusing on the local aspect of local food. So if you don't want to go outside of your county, you can see what's available just down the road. So that's kind of an example of what those pages would look like. We've also got some new board members, some younger energy coming on, which I think is promising for the future. And also our first employee, Bianca. She's a gateway student here in horticulture, and she'll be coming on. She's already done some work, and she'll be coming on this spring to kind of start taking over some of the work that I've been coordinating that UW Extension has been working on in the past. So that's really exciting. She's got a lot of energy. So, and also the biggest news is that we've been collaborating with the statewide network on a local food promotion grant, and we successfully received it and are already working on the development of a new statewide website. All of the region's websites are kind of getting outdated and they're pretty static. So we figured a one-stop shop for people would probably be the best. And it's searchable, it'll be mobile friendly. It'll feature not only the listings themselves, but farm feature stories, and kind of have a more educational and consumer awareness focus on that side of things. But this is just what it's looked like. There's gonna be a new logo, and it should be operational the end of this month if everything goes as planned. So it's a pretty exciting product. And it takes a lot of the management out of the regional Atlas's hands, which is nice in a way. I don't think we're gonna lose control. We just don't have to update listings on an annual basis and pay a web hosting fee and all that. So it's gonna be a way for us to focus on what we'd really like to do, which is doing more outreach. Bianca would like to get out to more of the markets and start doing farm visits and writing content based on her experiences and giving people another outlet in addition to Atlas themselves through Facebook and social media. We're also focusing on kind of streamlining our distribution, getting the Atlases into public libraries and letting people know exactly where they can expect to find one. In the past, it's been a little helter-skelter, so having people be able to go to one place and know that they'll always find an Atlas there is part of our goal for this year, so we'll see if that's going to happen. But all of these things are kind of working towards the end goal of getting the Atlas to be more sustainable and have UW Extension take more of an advisory role and less of a coordinating role in the future. So I think we're getting there. It's been a slow process, but it's pretty exciting. So so with that, I've given you the little sheets. I don't know if anybody's filled them out, but if you do have a chance, we are collecting input that will inform the future content design of the not only of the print atlases, but of our new web design. There's still time to make changes and tweaks to that, and I'm sure once, even after it comes out, we'll be making it more user-friendly and just trying to make it as helpful of a resource for folks as it can be. So that's all I've got, Teddy.
Thanks, well, I thought you had mentioned last year about this time that it was only going to be in a digital format, you weren't going to print any.
Yeah, we've kind of done some evaluation on that, and there is such a high demand for the atlases print in a print format. So we've decreased the amount that we're printing quite substantially, and we're going to see how that goes. And I think with having a really good, solid web presence, you know, we'll be able to start weaning people off of the print publication, because it will be so much more usable and probably even, you know, in some ways more user-friendly than the print atlas and more usable for people. But, you know, we do have a lot of folks that read it that tend to be an older generation, and they really just like having the hard copy every year. But yeah, it is a good way that it's not only to save paper, you're saving money, it's all around a good idea. And so we have cut distribution quite a bit. So we'll kind of see how that works and see what, you know, what the demand is like this year. But I think, you know, everybody's going more mobile, so we're just trying to kind of follow that trend, but keep our, you know, past customers happy.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Next generation reorganization update.
I'm thinking we are, yeah, that's right. Like, where am I on it? So I can tell you that Dean Carl Martin has announced that Matt Hansen is our new assistant dean for the southern part of the state. So we're currently organized into four regions, and we have a regional director. Our region goes from Marinette to Kenosha. It's the whole eastern side of the state, and it's referred to as the East Metro. And Gerald Carruthers has been our regional director. Wiped the slate clean. They took out all the four regions and drew a line from about Green Bay, slanted down right above Dane County over Ketchikan, La Crosse, and that's considered the southern part of the state. And one assistant dean, Matt Hansen, is going to be responsible for all of the administrative oversight. And then the northern part will be Dave Berard. So those two men have started, and their first job was to create a position description for all of the area extension directors. So if you take my position as the director in Kenosha County, and Bev Baker in the department head in Racine County, those jobs are now going to go away, and it will be one position for both counties. And those positions have been posted, and they're accepting internal applications only. It's an internal process for all the regions across the state, or areas across the state, and those positions close April 24th. So I anticipate that a new person will be in place in our administrative lead here in Kenosha and Racine before I leave on June 6th. Yay! Like, well, perfect. We could just make it happen. That would be awesome. So that's my update there.
Okay. Any comments? Okay, program updates. Any of those?
All right, well, I've been really busy doing a lot of different things, but I think fresh off the press today was a good article about some work I'm doing around Uptown neighborhood and Brass Village. We're kind of calling it Uptown Brass Village because there's some movement towards potentially moving towards creating a business improvement district in the next few years, and there's been a map and several conversations with a lot of the businesses, but I kind of got engaged with David Andrea, who is the owner of Andrea's gift shop, and then also Dennis Nelson, and I was just feeling them out and thinking, like, there's got to be some other ways that we can do community engagement that doesn't require a bid, because it's just a lot at stake, and it's complex, and it's costly, and there could be controversy if not everybody wants to do that. So we had the meeting, and we actually brought in a specialist from Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation who works with Main Streets, and they have a sort of a feeder program called the Connect Communities Program, which is like extremely easy to do, and it offers basically like a monthly webinar series. It gives some professional development around forming bids and working with public institutions, and really just open to all volunteers that, you know, potentially become more engaged and active in their communities. And then also just provides technical resources if we do incorporate into a bid, or, you know, Uptown wants to move forward in some ways, that they have like technical resources and also things around facade improvements and things. So it's just like a wealth of resources and a kind of intermediary step before we like jump into a formal association. So that's moving forward. The chamber decided to vouch for them and provide the application on behalf of the chamber, on behalf of the Uptown Brass Village community. And there's not real firm boundaries on, you know, who is in the Connects community per se. It's not a bid in that way where you've got to have really specific boundaries. But it's great, and now we're thinking, how do we get more? We had 40 people turn out, so it was really great to see so many different people taking an interest in this. And the question of how to engage more residents is always like front of mind. So now they're thinking of maybe doing some kind of an activation event at the vacant bank building that we hosted the meeting on 63rd there. It's a beautiful building, and it's just an And we could really put it to use in some interesting ways to engage the community. So stay tuned on that. We also have a process underway called the Creative Economy Strategic Plan, and we have an event on April 28th to unveil the plan after 9 months worth of work. We had a retreat a few weeks back and hosted 25 steering committee members, and we did a lot of planning, and now it's time to go live and have a party and have a lot of fun. So you're all welcome. It's at Gateway Technical College on April 28th at 5:30. We've got bands, we've got SASB's catering in, and it's just going to be a lot of fun and good networking. And then finally, I'm working with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra as well on some board development and donor development strategies. Teddy fortunately was able to come and facilitate, as I'm pretty deep into it now and I have my own biases. I asked Teddy to come in and facilitate a conversation about planning for their next concert series for the next year, 2017-2018. That was successful. It was a very long meeting and a lot of back and forth, but I think everybody's happy with the notion of two concerts and one alternative event and one fundraiser. We've historically had a few more concerts than I think they can afford, so we're backing them down and trying to kind of just make this sustainable. So their concert is on April 29th at Ruther, and it's called From Russia with Love, and it's all about Russian composers and some of the greatest music ever made. So certainly welcome to come out and support our symphony, which is a professional symphony. It's very rare for a community of our size to have one, and we have one of the best conductors also in the region up here from Northwestern University. So, anywho, let me know if you're interested in any of those things. Yeah.
For my county colleagues,
sure.
If you can describe, generally speaking, where the Brass Village is, and maybe describe what it is, a bid actually is, and how.
Sure.
Why they're formed and what are their purposes.
Okay, well, I mean, and certainly help me if I get this wrong at all, but if we're talking 60th Street, Highway K, as it comes down into Kenosha, kind of east to west, 22nd Avenue is a commercial district that cuts through north-south. And then we also have Roosevelt Road coming through the heart of Uptown. Brass Village is a former brownfield from the Brass Company site. I'm not sure exactly their formal name, but large industrial production site of brass.
Outokumpu Copper.
Copper, okay.
That was the most recent
true
owner
before
of that.
It was America Brass.
Yes, it was.
Right. America Brass.
Thank you. So you guys can fill in these. But now it's
history.
Brownfield in this day and age. And it's been redeveloped to be at Brass Village. That's where Lincoln Save is. And there's TCF Bank. And they've had a number of multi-use developments that have been reasonably successful. Plus, Brass School
cool.
is there, which is a community school. And it's a true asset to the community in every way. So that's the area geographically we're speaking about, 22nd Avenue, the commercial district, kind of crosses in with 63rd, and that's where we're hosting the meetings, but there's a fantastic little library that we've hosted some events, a branch of the Kenosha Public Library, and a Tudor-style, architecturally like significant building. It's lovely. So this is a very rich region of history for the city and development, and a lot of disinvestment over the years, and now we're seeing some formerly we had a business improvement district, which is essentially very specific geographic area that is targeted for a special tax that business owners and any residential property, I think over 4 units, has to pay to basically put into a fund that can be used for improvements in the district, whether it's beautification projects or hiring a manager, handling a lot of different, I guess, projects. It could be car shows and things in the past that the bid had kind of overseen. So the bid was dissolved several years ago, and now we're seeing a lot of the anchors of the area have pulled out, and now we're seeing much lower quality sort of tenants and property owners buying, say, 16 properties at a crack, which is never good because that means that they're likely not maintaining properties. When you take that many on, there's property owners that have hundreds of parcels and properties. So there's a lot of kind of areas of improvement, and certainly they're really a general kind of consensus that it's really gone too far, and with some safety and security issues kind of on the rise. If you read the Kenosha News, it's kind of a violent area between the hours of, say, 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. It's like a whole different community. And many people that live there say they are afraid to go out at night due to the gang activity and things. So it's ripe for, I think, a lot of engagement, and we just have to start with, start at the ground level and the grassroots.
So this section of the city is the highest crime rate of the entire city, between 63rd Street and 60th Street, 22nd Avenue and Sheraton Road. It's also the poorest section of the city. One of the things that the city of Kenosha is taking on, which I don't know was mentioned at your meeting, and I apologize for not being there. If I don't put it in my calendar, I right over my head. And thanks for the reminder email, but again, I apologize. The city of Kenosha is building a super fire station on the corner of 52nd Street and 22nd Avenue, where the old Bain School sits. And they're closing down the fire station on Washington and 22nd Avenue, and closing down the fire station right at the southern corner of this area that we're talking about, the uptown area. That fire station on that corner is going to be a police substation that will see more foot patrol, bicycle patrol police officers out of that location. So that's one of the things that the city's trying to do to combat some of that high crime in the area. Hopefully that will help with these business owners who had been resistant to formally organizing a taxing entity to help their efforts. Hopefully that will help them. Because I think that's the biggest problem is the crime. It's not attractive. I mean, you can attract business if you have people to sell to. And if people that you want to sell to are afraid to come there, then how do you attract business? So, hopefully that gets along.
Yeah, the question of perception and how much is reality and perception, and then in the news, with the latest article that we had yesterday, or on Monday the meeting, sure enough, they quote someone saying, oh, and we got such a crime problem. It's like uptown is just continually associated with crime, that we really have to work on kind of framing it differently, as this is one of the richest areas of residential homes, of families, of children, of schools, of parks. We have an incredible amount of resources there that could be put together, put to use for the good of the community.
I was just going to commend you. I saw the article in the paper like they was talking about earlier. My father retired from American Brass while they were at a conference, so this property has a lot of nostalgia for myself and growing up in that area and just being in that neighborhood because my dad worked there. But I appreciate you bringing business leaders and people together. It would be nice to, like you said, see these homeowners come out and partake in this and maybe overcome some of these gangs and crimes. If you have homeowners that will take a vested interest and pride in their community, but when you have people who are buying 16 units at a time and they're rentals, and they're renting probably to those who may not be able to afford housing otherwise. But I commend you for trying to bring the community together, and it would be interesting to see if homeowners will come out to this. I know it was predominantly business leaders, 40 people.
Yeah, I mean, it was on a Monday at 8:30, so I mean, to be fair, I don't know many people that can get off of work. And
do you think you might do something in the
yes.
evening? Or?
Oh yeah, we've got lots of ideas. So this was just the start of many, many kind of activities. And throughout the summer, we've got a number of activities in the parks that, I mean, it's just the start of a lot of, and it's not even the start, because we've been meeting for years, once a month, but it's all been kind of just limited to a small group of business owners.
There really are a lot of very interested and engaged property owners that live around uptown. Being the former alderman of the district just to the south where Lincoln Park is, I can tell you, I held community meetings, you know, at least four times a year in Lincoln Park, and they were very well attended. And they all generally had the same concerns, which is, what are you going to do about, you know, this incredibly awful gang situation that seems to be located centrally in this area? If you remember a couple of years ago, there were two undercover police officers that, you know, got the crap kicked out of them by 30 guys. And, you know, you have those kind of characters, you know, how do you expect homeowners to treat them? You know, they're, you know, going to want to sit back and hide, because if they're going to do that to police officers, they wouldn't think about doing it to you or me. So, again, thanks for
it's
the
not
explanation.
I appreciate that, but I mean, commending UW Central for doing this work. We have a charge to extend our work to every part of the county, and we really do have a mission to reach out to our urban communities. So that's what I was hired for. I mean, I remember being interviewed by Jenny Tuckies, and she was most interested in the fact that I had done like the door-to-door sort of organizing work in Waukesha, and it's taken 4 years for me to finally have the chance to like really get it to a community that's like ready to do something.
What occurred to me when you're talking about, you know, the Atlas and additional markets, something occurred to me that, you know, there aren't a lot, or at least that I've run across, very organized farmers markets in central cities. I mean, near the central parts of the city. And then thinking, even if there was, you know, how much of a demand would there be for it? And one of the things I thought was always lacking, only because, you know, I know how to grill meat and that's about it. And I can stick French fries in an oven and that's about it. But if I'm walking along and looking at a variety of you know, produce farmers, you know, the green pepper or the red onion may look wonderful, but I don't know what the heck to do with it. Mm-hmm. So have you seen an examples of other farmers markets where they're not only have the produce available, but, you know, people giving demonstrations on what to do with this? And then
can you bring these
to, you know, the parts of the community that really might not have the education?
Right. Yeah. In fact, the nutrition educators do often do that. They'll go to the farmers market, you know, pick up food right from there, and then do a demonstration of how to prepare it and how to, you know, what you want to cook with it. But that is kind of like, it's a chicken or the egg situation where you're, you know, if you bring people to the market, they have to be unintimidated by the products that are there. And I think that's that's a huge, you know, learning curve and something that they're trying to do at a really basic level. And, you know, and then you have on the other hand vendors that are reluctant to go to markets that are serving those audiences because the sales just aren't as high. You don't have a lot of foot traffic. So it's a whole kind of complicated thing, but yeah.
Okay, we're after 7. Are there any director updates quickly?
Just that I need to announce that next month for May 10th, we won't have the extension portion of the meeting because the three of us are presenting at a national conference in Minneapolis on our sustainable Kenosha County. And so that just left some of the part-time folks who are sharing, we're sharing with Racine. So it's probably in your best interest to just show up for your 7 o'clock part of the meeting and have your planning. And I don't know about that agenda. I mean, it's possible that they could say to you that they have nothing on their agenda, then you would have no meeting and you could have a month off. It'd be kind of nice too.
I'll still be in Key West.
You'll be so cute, so you don't really care, do you? And then I just want to remind you all, you will be receiving, you probably get it in today's mail or tomorrow's mail, our April 27th 100th anniversary celebration at Kemper Center to help us celebrate 100 years of Kenosha County's UW Extension office. So we hope to see you there. Okay,
we'll recess and go into the hearing.
Will this be your last meeting?
This is my last meeting.
Oh.